This is How to Kill a Piano. I am George Tate. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for being here. Thanks for telling your friends. Thanks for keeping this story alive, because without you, there's really no motivation to keep going. I mean with this story. I don't mean with life. Life is great. I don't want to chatter on too long, because you're probably eager to get to the next part of the story. So without further ado, here's chapter 21 of How to Kill a Piano. Chapter 21, Essence of Absinthe. To some, our ordinary looks like pure magic. It's important to remember that the world is filled with ordinary things. The world is filled with pure magic. It's all a matter of perspective. Absinthe's favorite way to bring a month to a close was to have a long soak in his bath with a good book. But if anyone were to find out about it, particularly his Uncle Scrutius, he'd never hear the end of it. It wasn't the bath that was the issue. That process was necessary and encouraged. It was reading. Reading was forbidden amongst his kind. This was the one time, at the end of the month, that Absinthe felt that he could truly sink in and enjoy himself. But this particular morning, he found himself with more time than usual with his monthly soak, as Uncle Scrutius was busy preparing for the seance. The burgundy clawfoot bathtub sat in the center of the cavernous room, whose floor was not unlike a black and white chessboard. The turquoise molded classical walls were covered in a mixture of moss and oil paintings that depicted rubber ducks in various states of undress. Of course, the ducks themselves donned devil horns perched on their heads. Some smoked cigars, others navigated gondolas sculling it through painted waters with the devil's pitchfork, and some simply enjoyed a good soak amongst the painted bath bubbles. This was Absinthe's happy place. He sat patiently, barefoot, on a small rectangular wooden stool beside the tub, as the scalding water rose to just the right height where he could pour in his favorite bubble bath solution, Blackmore's Bath Bubbles. This particular soapy solution was made from a mixture of foaming surfactants, coconut oil, fennel, star anise, and the ground flowers of a small wormwood shrub. Its concoction made the water glow a chartreuse green and provided a long-lasting bubble that danced upon the water's surface that was unmatched. Breaking the water's surface tension with his left big toe, Absinthe listened joyfully as it sizzled around his skin. Smiling, he knew everything was ready just as he liked it. He stripped off his charcoal suit one piece at a time. He hung the jacket over the stool first before unbuttoning his four-button vest. He loosened the tie that held a firm grip around his throat and slipped the circled hangman's knot over his head without untying it completely. He folded each piece of his wardrobe carefully before draping it over top of the stool. His slacks were last. He slid them off and climbed in as the solution began to work its magic, producing bubble after bubble. The morning dusk air mixed with the chartreuse green glow of the tub. He leaned back, submerging himself into the water all the way up to his neck. He closed his eyes and let out a sigh of relaxation as the scalding water filled in the crevices of his skin. The water would have boiled nearly any other creature alive, though to Absinthe, it felt like a warm hug, something he rarely got anywhere else. It was the one time he could truly relax and focus. Unfortunately, He's already read every book he secretly owned many times over. The pages were beginning to dull with how frequently he visited them. He let out an audible sigh, picked up his necktie from the stool beside him, and plunged it into the steaming water before wringing it out again and draping it over the eyes. As if on cue, one of the intervals wobbled into Absinthe's bathing room without announcing itself. It carefully hopped diagonally over each black tile as it carefully traversed the room's checkerboard. It gently cradled a small white hardcover book in its arms as it found its way to Absinthe's bathside. Gently tapping the corner of the spine on the side of the tub, Absinthe's relaxed attention was finally stirred. Lifting the tie from one of his eyes and peering over the side of the tub, Absinthe found the interval grinning up at him, with its cleft eyes glowing in the bath light. It lifted its tiny arms into the air, showing off the book like a dog that had just retrieved a ball in a game of fetch. While the book was small, it was nearly the same size as its head. "Huxley," Absinthe cackled. While most of the intervals didn't have names, Absinthe decided to call this one, and only this one, Huxley. "You're right on time. Is that it? Did you actually find it?" Absinthe carefully dried his hands and arms on his suit beside the tub before taking the book in hand. Huxley nodded proudly before scurrying off the way it came, carefully jumping across each black tile, still avoiding the white. "Huxley, you know those white tiles won't cause you any harm," Absinthe called out after the interval as it vanished back into the outskirts of the room. It wasn't that Huxley thought the white tiles were dangerous or that they had any kind of superstitious belief that touching them would be a bad omen, but rather the intervals always found fun in as many things as they could. They watched most other beings getting caught up in the darkness around them, and the intervals decided that they would simply embrace it. They'd make as many things into a game as they could. It brought them joy. Absinthe settled back into his bath and ran his fingers over the embossed lettering on the cover. "Invisible persuasions. Perceptions. Invisible perceptions. By Charlie Soferic and Sarah Swathy." Absinthe read out loud as his fingers traced the curved letters of each embossed imprint. "Huxley, my friend, I have no idea how you found it again, but I have a feeling this book is going to change my life." His toes splashed about the surface of the water as he consumed each page. He learned of the secret chords that could invoke the piano's magic. He learned about Charlie and Sarah. He didn't quite make sense of every page, but it was the last few chapters in particular that left him with the most questions. Particularly, why Scroodius and Charlie seemed to be written as friends within this book. "What sort of nonsense fiction is this?" Absinthe questioned. "I've never read a more broken book." Maybe Uncle Scroodius was right. Maybe these books really are getting in the way of my intelligence. Absinthe was about to drown the book in the bath when he noticed something peculiar along the spine. The bottom stem of the N at the end of the word perception was slightly raised, almost as if something was sticking out of it. Absinthe began scratching at it with his thumbnail. It revealed a small pull tab, and he started to tug. It began to rip through the cover of the spine, revealing lettering along the cord that continued to destroy the book's cover as it pulled through and around the backside of the book. The small print read, "Do not fear me. Follow my lead, for I am indestructible." Continuing to pull, he found it guiding around from the backside to the inside back cover, where it began to hollow out the entire inside. "Indestructible?" Absinthe questioned. Nearing the end, it completely ripped the backing paper from its baseboard to reveal a folded sheet of paper that nearly fell into the tub as it was freed from obfuscation. "I've never seen a book do this before," Absinthe pondered. "Abby!" Scrutius scolded as he burst into the bathing room, talking dramatically, waving the stump at the end of his arms about as if his hand were still attached. "What did I tell you about those stupid books of yours?" Scrutius looked down at the leftover rubbish floating on the surface of the now mostly bubble-free bathwater. "Never mind. I'll take it back," Scrutius corrected as he scooped up a waterlogged scrap from the water's surface. "At least you're doing something constructive for once with them instead of reading them. Though, might I suggest, they make a better fire starter. Drowning a book is a lot like trying to suffocate a piano. It might dissolve for a while, but turn your back for even a moment, and it's right back to chapter one." Absinthe quickly dipped the folded page over the side of the tub, keeping it hidden from Scrutius, as he continued scooping the remains of the book into his hands, where each piece instantly caught fire. Scrutius dropped the last few pieces to the floor, where they continued to burn to ash. "When you're done waiting in your water-filled wonderland of wistful woes, I need you to finish the preparation for this evening's performance. The intervals will be back with a fresh set of keys, and you know how I love to hear you play while we theatrically raise the dead."
"Boss?" Absinthe interrupted.
"What is it now, dear nephew?"
Did you know Charlie before?"
"What are you on about? You know I've been chasing Charles longer than you've been alive. I've known him more intimately than nearly anyone else."
"Right, but were you close? Were you..." Absinthe hesitated to say the word.
"Well, out with it," Scrutius scolded.
Friends, Absinthe finished.
"I can't help but notice you haven't yet prepared the rope for the finale. What the hell did you do with my hand? Does this not seem like an important detail that should have been addressed before the sun started to show its head for the day?"
Scrutius deflected. Absinthe had been so distracted by the book, he hardly noticed that Scrutius was still missing his writing hand, as he had yet to return it. He had intended to, when he was through writing my invitation to the evening seance, but found himself distracted with thoughts about the book.
"There's plenty of time for that, Uncle," Absinthe retorted sullenly, peering into his reflection that was now visible on the chartreuse surface of the water as most of the bubbles had met their end. His naked body clearly visible beneath the face of his reflection, reminding him of what he was born to be.
Scrutius suddenly grabbed Absinthe by the hair with his working hand. Absinthe panicked. His breath echoed in his ears as he desperately fought against Scrutius's grip as his head was forced down beneath the water. Absinthe's wide eyes pleaded for mercy, his lungs burning for oxygen they so desperately craved. The scrap of folded paper slipped from his fingertips and floated to the floor beneath the clawfoot tub as Absinthe found himself fully submerged beneath the water's surface. As seconds stretched into an eternity, his body instinctively convulsed. His hands hopelessly grasped for the sides of the tub, desperate to pull himself up. His feet kicked at the surface, thrashing and flailing,
but his movements only grew weaker as his energy depleted. The intervals began to appear from within the outskirts of the room, encircling the tub, standing only on the white squares. Not one daring to intervene, but not one wanting Absinthe to feel alone in this moment.
If you insist on prolonging these baths and neglecting your other responsibilities, we'll simply need to reset things a bit,
Scrutius sternly announced. Absinthe barely made out Scrutius's words as bubbles erupted from his mouth as he struggled to reach the surface to breathe. The water, once a source of joy, now became a prison, a hug wrapping around him like a suffocating shroud. Scrutius locked eyes with Absinthe as he watched the darkness encroach upon him, as he watched Absinthe's eyelids slowly begin to close. Every nerve in Absinthe's body screamed for air. His chest ached in agony with the unforgiving embrace of water until suddenly the surface went still and Scrutius released his grip. Scrutius sat down on the small wooden stool beside the tub and admired his work in silence as he rolled his neck back, giving it a crack. Straightening his neck out again, he noticed his audience of intervals.
It's just another day like any other. Don't act like this is any different than the last time,
Scrutius scoffed as he plunged his hand back into the tub and pulled the plug. The intervals calmly and silently slipped back into the darkness, and the two of them were alone once again. The liquid began to swirl down the drain as it emptied from the tub. It traveled deep beneath the floorboards where the intervals eagerly waited with empty glass bottles that they filled one after another after another. The intervals carefully corked each bottle as it was filled, diligently labeling each one with the correct time, month, and year, and then lined them carefully on the shelves deep within Scrutius's cellar, preserving yet another month of Absinthe. They've been doing this ritual for hundreds of years. Absinthe's body laid still and damp at the bottom of the empty bath.
Abby,
Scrutius cooed.
Abby, it's time to get out of that bath. My dear Abby,
Scrutius instructed with a tone of voice that was almost kind.
You'll freeze yourself to death laying there like that.
Absinthe's lifeless body began to choke, coughing up a remnants of bath water all over himself. I'm sorry, Uncle. Absinthe wheezed as his body began to slowly reanimate.
Did you fall asleep in the bath again, Abby? I told you not to lose track of time here. It's dangerous and irresponsible. Now, I believe you still have something that belongs to me, Scrutius said gently, holding up the stub end of his arm.
Yeah, I do. Sorry, Uncle. Let me get myself back together and I'll go fetch it straight away, Absinthe said, exasperated.
Now, there's my good little demon. I'll be sure to tell Cordiva how well you've been doing. We'll maybe even get you a new tie. Would you like that, Abby?
Of course, Uncle. Scrutius made eye contact with the ashed remains of the burnt book for the first time. Satisfied that it was gone, he made his exit.
I'm pleased. You're pleased?
Scrutius chuckled.
Everything's great. Meet me in the rehearsal room with my hand. And put your damn suit back on. The color's fading.
Scrutius's tone turned to anger. But his body relaxed as he calmly stepped out of the room, carefully stepping only on black tiles, leaving Absinthe to air dry.
You have 20 minutes. Don't dawdle.
Absinthe pulled himself out of the tub and carefully dressed himself, sliding each leg into the trousers, buttoning the button around his waist, pulling the shirt back around his body, his lanky fingers buttoning each button all the way up to his neck. He slid the vest back on, buttoning the first 3 buttons of the 4-button vest, before topping everything off with the charcoal suit. He scooped up his tie from the bottom of the tub and carefully placed it into the outside jacket pocket of the sports coat. He carefully crouched down to his knees to peer beneath the tub to retrieve the paper, desperately hoping that it hadn't gotten too waterlogged in the accident. He was surprised to find most of the page intact, and every word still readable. Life's most precious moments often arrive unannounced. Stay present and cherish the magic that's found in each unexpected encounter. You may grow old, but not all of us grow wise. For some, that might take several lifetimes. It did for me. The unexpected is not an obstacle to overcome. It is an invitation to explore new dimensions of yourself and the world around you. In the realm of eternal beings, where time and mortality held no sway, there existed an entity known as Archeli, a god-like being whose existence stretched across countless ages. Archeli possessed the unique ability to regenerate, shredding its physical form and emerging anew in a fresh vessel. This cyclical rebirth granted the gift of immortality as the entity seamlessly transitioned from one life to the next. For eons, Archeli perpetuated its divine lineage by nurturing perfect replicas of itself, which it would raise to eventually assume its role. Each iteration brought forth an identical being, carrying the essence and memories of its predecessor. These replicas, born and raised under Archeli's watchful eye, were meticulously groomed to inherit the godlike powers and responsibilities. Yet, as time went on, a newfound sense of introspection began to stir within Archeli. The immortal being peered into the depths of its eternal existence, questioning the purpose of its unending cycle. It pondered the nature of its clones, their inherent right to forge their own destinies separate from the predetermined path it had imposed upon them. One particular replica named Ogri had grown under Archeli's careful tutelage. As Ogri blossomed into a remarkable being, Archeli observed the spark of individuality. It was then that Archeli recognized the injustice it had inadvertently imposed upon its replicas. The godlike entity had unknowingly deprived them of the autonomy to explore their own desires, dreams, and aspirations. A deep sorrow took hold of Archeli's heart as it confronted the truth. It realized that the time had come to relinquish its immortality, to allow Ogri to live his own life, free from the shadows of his progenitor. Archeli yearned to grant its replica the gift of self-discovery, of forging its own paths, unburdened by the weight of predestined purpose. It tried to urge the rest of its kind to follow his lead, but only one would stand with him, knowing they'd have to watch him slowly forget themselves in the process as they slipped away. With great solemnity, Archeli called upon Ogri and revealed the truth, unveiling the secret of their shared origin. Ogri listened intently. A maelstrom of emotions stirred within him. Confusion, gratitude, and a sense of duty intertwined as he grappled with the weight of this revelation. In the presence of Archeli's wisdom, Ogri understood that his existence was not merely an extension of his predecessor. He recognized the inherent right to forge his own legacy, independent of the path laid before him. Archeli, with his divine wisdom, had come to terms with its own mortality and the necessity of passing the mantle to Ogri. In a grand gesture of love and sacrifice, Archeli relinquished its immortality, willingly allowing itself to fade into the melodies of history. The eternal entity embraced the finality of its existence, finding solace in knowing that Ogri would now shape its own destiny, unrestrained by the shackles of an inherited legacy. As the divine essence of Archeli dissipated into the ether, Ogri stood alone, a mixture of sadness and gratitude coursing through its being. He knew the weight of the responsibility that now rested upon his shoulders, but also embraced the boundless freedom to carve his own narrative. And so, with Archeli's passing, the cycle was broken, and Ogri, empowered by the lessons of his predecessor, embarked on a new journey, destined to become a tale of his own making. The legacy of Archeli served as a reminder for all of their kind that even gods must confront their mortality and grant others the chance to thrive, weaving their own stories within the tapestry of eternity. Rather than fear the unknown, dance with it. Allow it to be your partner in this intricate choreography of life. Be open to the whispers of fate, for they may lead you to the very destinations to stop this cycle and allow us all to grow. We can become our own. We can finally live. Absinthe kicked his bare foot through the ashed remnants of the book. Indestructible, my ass. Absinthe muttered as he felt his toe unexpectedly hit the sharp corner of a book that had begun to reconstitute itself beneath its own burnt remains. Absinthe carefully refolded the page that was now dry as a bone. Gently bent down and scooped the book out of the ashes that covered the floor. He safely tucked the folded page into the back of the book and tucked the book into his inside jacket pocket. I don't think this book was meant for me, Absinthe concluded. But I'll be damned if Uncle Scrutius gets his hands on it again. In the dimly lit depths of the ancient cellar where shadows danced and whispers echoed, Scrutius embarked on a ritualistic quest for a libation befitting his otherworldly palate.
Clear the room, Scrutius insisted as the intervals scattered.
The shelves were adorned with a vast array of tantalizing elixirs, each one steeped in potent mystique and forbidden allure. Scrutius glided amongst the rows of bottles, its ethereal presence barely disturbing the silence. With meticulous care, Scrutius reached out a hand, adorned with his obsidian claws, its sharp fingertips grazing the assortment of labels. Scrutius's piercing gaze swept over the collection, searching for the embodiment of exquisite temptation.
What year will it be this time?
His attention was captivated by a solitary bottle, shrouded in an aura of enchantment. The bottle of absinthe stood like a sentinel, its emerald hue refracted, the flickering candlelight beckoning Scrutius with a seductive allure. It was as if the very essence of darkness had been captured within the confines of this glass vessel. With reverence, Scrutius lifted the bottle from its resting place, feeling the weight of centuries of decadence in its grasp. The cork, encrusted with ancient symbols, yielded under the gentle persuasion of the demon's touch, released a whispering sigh, a waft of intoxicating fragrance. An amalgamation of anise, wormwood, and mystery filled the air, swirling around Scrutius like a tempting waltz. A crystal glass, delicate yet resilient, awaited the elixir's arrival. Scrutius poured the emerald elixir, its mesmerizing fluidity cascading with graceful precision, teasing the confines of the vessel as it settled into its newfound home. Scrutius's claws clinked softly against the glass, resonating with anticipation as he raised the elixir towards his lips. With measured sips, Scrutius indulged in the forbidden nectar, relishing the dance of flavors upon its infernal tongue. The velvety essence coated his palate, each sip revealing hidden depths and mysteries long kept. As the elixir glided down his throat, a surge of wicked pleasure coursed through Scrutius's ethereal form, an intoxication that transcended realms. Time seemed to stand still as Scrutius savored the complexities of the absinthe, a symphony of sensations merging with the darkness within. His eyes glimmered with an unholy ecstasy, a reflection of the pleasure bestowed upon him by the elixir of decadence. In that clandestine cellar, amid the hushed whispers of spirits long past, Scrutius found solace in the exquisite indulgence of his absinthe. Scrutius, with every sip, embraced the forbidden and reveled in the intoxicating dance of flavors. Each note mixed with the next, knowing that this moment of sinful pleasure was a respite from the eternal abyss that bound him. Once the glass was empty, Scrutius corked the bottle and placed it back on the shelf. He wiped the residue out of the glass with his pocket square, leaving no trace behind, with the exception of the bottle's depletion.
"Ah, thank you, Abby," Scrutius groaned. "We're delicious as ever."
That concludes another episode of How to Kill a Piano. I'm George Tate. Thanks so much for listening. As always, the story is original and written by yours truly. The music for this was, of course, also original and played and composed specifically to score this episode. Until next time, I am George Tate. Please enjoy yourself, and if you can't enjoy yourself, enjoy someone else with their consent, although it might be best to find pleasure in your own company first. For updates, please feel free to visit us at howtokillapiano.com. You can also contact us directly through that website and let us know your thoughts. I'm always eager to hear from you. Cheers for now.